Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Certainly getting icy on Capitol Hill and on Twitter. Jordana Green here and Paul Douglas from his, are you in the sanctioned zone where you can't give anybody Ebola?
I'm in the Batcave, and yeah. But thank you for not stopping by my hospital bed
to
visit me.
No, I'm not coming to see you.
Today.
I don't want to be near you if you're sick. Better to do the show from home and stay away from all of us.
Well, listen, don't hold back. Tell me what you really think. I'm fine, by the way. I'm fine. Yesterday, it felt like I was gargling razor blades, but
good
now
times.
It's going down into my chest, and I may cough once or twice, but I don't want to get on your bad side, Jordana, so I'm doing the show from home so I don't infect you.
Well, thanks for sharing. And somebody who doesn't care about getting on someone's bad side, clearly the president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, he just tweeted about 2 hours ago, quote, "The never Trumper Republicans, though on respirators with not many left, are in certain ways worse and more dangerous for our country than the do-nothing Democrats. Watch out for them. They are human scum." So the president of the United States just called never Trumper Republicans, members of his own party, human scum. It was that tweet happened 2 hours ago. There are currently over 45,000 likes of that tweet. And you know, oh boy, it's been a real clown farm on Capitol Hill. House Republicans staged a protest outside a secure committee room, and House Democrats have sent a new request to the State Department for key documents relating to this Ukraine affair. This was actually pretty crazy. Two Republican leaders that were not on the committee to oversee this closed-door deposition, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida and Steve Scalise, who we know, staged this protest outside with Republican lawmakers beating down the door of these closed-door depositions. Here's a little bit of what Steve Scalise said outside that meeting.
What is Adam Schiff trying to hide? I think that's a question so many people have, so many of my colleagues have, so many people in the press should have, is through those hidden closed doors over there, Adam Schiff is trying to impeach a president of the United States behind closed doors, literally trying to overturn the results of the 2016 election.
So just a little bit of fact checking there. Adam Schiff cannot impeach a president. Adam Schiff cannot overturn the results of any election. So what is happening behind those closed doors is the Democratic-led impeachment inquiry. Now, keep in mind, about two dozen House Republicans chanted, "Let us in," and then tried to secure the room where a Defense Department official was on Wednesday morning to testify. Okay, so they wanted to see the testimony. Now, the lawmakers do not sit on the committees conducting the inquiry and are therefore not entitled to attend the hearings. They said they were protesting the closed-door natures of the proceedings, but those proceedings are open to members of both parties who do sit on the committees. So there are Republicans allowed in that room if they sit on the committee. And I imagine that is standard procedure on Capitol Hill, that you're allowed to go to meetings if you're on the committee. But if you're not on the committee, you don't go to those meetings. So
right.
It was just a hot mess at the Capitol today.
Bang, hey, Jure, I'm all for accountability and transparency, but the rules are the rules. And as you said, and it's worth repeating, House rules only allow members to participate in depositions if they serve on the committees holding those depositions. I'm seeing some estimates, maybe another 2 to 4 weeks of closed-door hearings before it does become public. And, yeah, all of this is going to become public. And there were some suggestions today that the reaction from the GOP from these House members may have something to do with yesterday's testimony from Bill Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat in the Ukraine, who basically said that, yeah, there was a quid pro quo.
It was damning. It was damning. It is an ever-evolving story. We will keep you up to date. But that was just the first of our three trenders today, just the clown farm that it is on Capitol Hill, what's going on there. This other big story, this is so upsetting to me, Paul, and I know it is to you. The St. Paul mayor, Mayor Melvin Carter, getting death threats and racist messages over trash collection. This is really, people are getting fired up. In a voicemail on Monday at Carter's office, an anonymous caller used racial slurs, warned that if taxes increase, Carter will have to, quote, pay for it and be forced to put in bulletproof windows in his house. Other mailings, like snail mail, newspaper clippings about the upcoming trash referendum and handwritten notes in black Sharpie addressed to Carter at his office said, quote, this is what we get for voting a bleep boy. Another envelope sent in June read, this is BS, you expletive racial slur. Paul, this is all about who's going to collect the trash in St. Paul. And yes, it could create higher taxes for people in the city of St. Paul. But this man is getting death threats with racial epithets over trash collection. We've lost our mind.
Yeah, we have. We have. And it gives white trash new meaning.
It's so sad.
Until about a year ago, Jora, residents in St. Paul could choose their haulers mm-hmm. or have none at all. And a lot of people prided themselves in not having any trash.
Right.
So I understand not wanting to pay for something that maybe you don't use. Mm-hmm. But under the current system, all St. Paul property owners have to pay for trash collection. So,
and maybe
yeah, tempers are high. I get that.
For
but
sure.
But no need to go into the gutter.
But that's right. That's not even civil disobedience. That's anger and death threats. And that is wrong. Our other trender of the day, Timberwolves. The first Timberwolves game of the season is right mm-hmm. here on
yep.
CCO. Pre-game begins at 6 o'clock, and we're very excited for the season to begin. And you can hear every Timberwolves game here on the home of the Timberwolves CCO. Super excited.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Bring it on.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
sign of the seasons. Here we go.
They start the season in Brooklyn, not a home game tonight in Brooklyn, but you can hear it on the hometown station CCO. And again, the pregame is at 6 right after our show. So that's it for our top three trenders. We'll lighten things up a little bit. Let's play our music game. What was the top of the Billboard chart this week when you were 18? Find out what it was for us next.
Paul and Jordana.
Jordana here. That's a little JT, a little Justin Timberlake. Not what was the hit when I was 18. Not sure that Justin Timberlake was born when I was 18. So that would have been, not have been my year. Welcome back, Jordana and Paul here.
See, I like Timberlake. I like Justin Timberlake.
I love him. He totally. Well, I don't know that sexy ever went away, but his new brand of sexy is working for me.
I still think music peaked in the 1970s.
Okay, no.
And you could make maybe
no.
the 80s.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I think
there's
so.
Some good music.
Back when there
even
was real
now.
Music, yeah.
Stop
yeah.
It. Oh, my
Come
God.
On.
I know.
Come on.
Stop it, old guy. Don't be the get off my lawn guy and not like the new music the young kids are playing.
I'm just saying. I'm a little biased.
Okay,
I'm a little
so
biased. Back.
So
what?
Prove it to us, Paul. What was hot when you were 18 this week?
When I was 18 with hardly a care in the world, back when life was simpler and arguably better some days, a much shorter to-do list, it was this tune from Chicago.
If you leave me now, you'll take away the biggest part of me.
I mean, you're kind of right.
Maybe he
I
is
remember,
right. That's a good tune.
Yeah.
I remember slow dancing to that.
You're kind of right on that one, because that's a great song.
At the prom, and that was okay.
That's a good song.
Who were you slow dancing with to this song at the prom?
Oh, God. Her first name was Debbie. Debbie Gibson.
It was not Debbie Gibson. You did not date Debbie Gibson.
No, not that Debbie Gibson. A different one.
Well, back in 1990, it was Janet Miss Jackson, If You're Nasty. Okay, that is so 1990, and
God.
I have never heard that terrible song in my life. I mean, I guess in 1990 I heard it because it was number one on the Billboard this week, but I am a Janet Jackson fan, and Black Cat was not a favorite of mine. I don't even remember that song. I love Miss Jackson, though. Wardrobe malfunction and all. I love me some Miss Jackson.
You can't like them all.
Yeah. So, David, you're a little youngster. You're a little pup of the group.
Yeah, it's a little newer here, but, you know, people love love to hate this band.
Look at this photograph. Every time I do, it makes me laugh. How did our eyes get so red? And what the hell is on Joey's head?
Everybody,
love that song.
I know people love to hate Nickelback. I'm kind of in the middle. I could take or leave Nickelback, but this is a good tune.
No way. I feel so strongly about Nickelback. I defend them on Twitter. They're Canadians. I love them. I love everything Nickelback. I think they're a nice rock band. I think the songs are fun. They're easy to listen to, and they're rocking.
And Paul,
why are there so many haters? Why are there so many haters with Nickelback?
Wait, you're the hater. You just said music peaked. 2 decades before the song was out.
I'm talking the vast majority of the music in the 70s.
Nickelback is the exception.
Better.
That's what you're saying.
Well,
but you're right about
there
Nickelback.
There were a few.
They're like this band that people love to hate.
I know.
They're like an internet meme.
I don't get
but
it.
I dig Nickelback. That Chad Kroeger, I even know this, Chad Kroeger is the lead singer.
Okay.
I mean, not sexy, but the songs are great. I just kind of close my eyes. I've never been to a concert.
Yeah, they're not a pretty band
they're not
necessarily
attractive.
To
no,
watch, which...
No.
That's what you, if you're a true rock and roller, you don't need to be pretty, right?
There you go. And I love the music, not just for the hair and all the whole shebang. So so that's fun. We play that when we were 18, what was on the Billboard charts. So do a little nostalgia and go look back at what was on the charts when you were 18 also. It's 3:27. When we get back, Paul, we're going to talk to Governor Tim Walz. He was on a listening tour yesterday. He went to local area high schools to talk about vaping and the vaping epidemic. He has a 12-year-old son. He is in the thick of it. He's having these conversations. So parents, if you got a tween, a teen, a young adult, someone who's going to be a young adult at some point, hear what the governor learned. And we'll ask him, what can he do about it? Next.
Paul and Jordana.
Vaping. Paul, we talk about this a lot on the show. It's dangerous. It's still mysterious. You know, a lot of the research isn't fully in yet. We don't know exactly what's causing these vaping deaths, too, in September in Minnesota alone. You know, our friends over at Cambria have started a giant campaign at the Minnetonka High School, and they're hoping to get it going viral, and that would be wonderful. You need to follow them at They Lied We Know. They're using the hashtag Escape the Vape on Twitter, Instagram, and vape and Facebook. And this is just an education campaign to talk about the dangers of vaping, what companies like Juul did, marketing to kids, and tell kids, just don't do it. Our own Governor Walz was on a listening tour yesterday. He was over in Hopkins. He was in St. Cloud. He was in Faribault to talk to local kids about vaping, learn some stuff, and hopefully create an action plan to save some lives. Paul, the governor is joining us on the phone right now. Hello, Governor.
Hi, Jordana. Hi, Paul. Get better.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah.
No, thanks for covering this. And hey, thank you also for mentoring the folks over at Cambria. Marty Davis is doing a great job with that. I've been talking to him. In fact, I was texting with him last night. He's deeply concerned about this, and he's getting engaged. And I think Marty and I have talked about this. This is about education. I think those numbers that came out on the Minnesota Student Survey that, you know, kind of validated what many of us knew, that we had a real epidemic on our hands. I think the scariest one for me was the 74% of our youth who are really bright thought this is a safe alternative to smoking. It's certainly not. You know, these catastrophic lung injuries are one thing, but the high concentrations of nicotine and the problems that come with that are yet to be known. So I appreciate what they're doing over there. And that's what we were out doing, listening to some really smart kids over at Hopkins yesterday and St. Cloud today.
Governor, I'm not proud to admit that I smoked when I was growing up. I was a bad smoker. I would buy a pack, smoke three, feel guilty, throw the rest away. At some point, it just became an economic decision, like, you idiot, what are you doing? But I'm so glad that there was no vaping alternative when I was growing up. Vaping really is the perfect nicotine delivery device, and it was sold, and I think a lot of young people feel cheated. It was sold as a safe, relatively safe alternative to smoking.
Absolutely.
And now we're finding out it may be as dangerous or more dangerous. What advice do you have, not only for kids, but parents? What should we be watching for?
Yeah, and the students mentioned that, you know, because we've had a real success, and Minnesota was ground zero for this. Those of us, I was listening to your what song was hot when you were 18 type of thing, is that we all went through that. And like at Hopkins, for example, over the last 15 years, they have reduced teen smoking to less than 2%. This was going to be the generation that got rid of it. And I got to be honest, Big Tobacco figured that out, and they delivered a modern way where kids today were talking to us. They sell hoodies now that the drawstrings are how you smoke your vape. Mm-hmm. It's concealed in the back, and you just pull up on the drawstring, and that's how you do it. So I think the biggest thing that I heard from the kids, these are sophisticated, and they understand it. And they were talking about how they consume information. The one thing they didn't want to hear is they certainly didn't want to be insulted with a just say no campaign. The governor coming in saying just say no and put up some accessory posters telling him to shoot for the stars. That's not how this works. And they also wanted to know, you know, for us to know, this is closely correlated with mental health issues. And they said these are not bad kids. You know, don't criminalize them. What they're finding is a lot of these kids, if you ask them, and I think the data is starting to support that. We saw that on the Minnesota Student Survey. They're using vaping as a way to cope with depression, anxiety, and other things that are happening. So they were really looking for us as adults to give them good information. And you're exactly right, Paul. I would have told you 3 years ago that, well, I don't want you to vape, but it seems like it's safer than cigarettes, that we don't have the data and the knowledge. And I think most adults would be shocked. You assume if something's sold, and I, you know, I'm one who I don't believe prohibition works on thing. I believe education works. I think most people believe if you buy something, somebody is checking it out. Somebody's making sure you don't get salmonella poisoning when you order food or whatever it might be. This stuff is gray area. Nobody's doing it. It is too early. The FDA is not doing it. And I think these, you know, and we don't even know yet exactly what's causing it. Potentially the black market THC products that are being used. We don't know that for sure. It's just these instant deaths that have ratcheted up the focus on it. But we're basically in about year five of an epidemic. It took us 40 years to reduce those teen smoking numbers down to 2%. We're in for a long battle here, I think.
Governor, my kids are ages 12 to 16 years old. I know you have a 12-year-old son.
Yep.
What do you talk to him about? What do you tell him?
Yeah, and I ask him, you know, if he knows about it. And I think parents need to know that kids know. And this isn't about, you know, trying to stay hip in what they're on. It is important to us. The kids tell us this, that they shouldn't be able to sell these products that are camouflaged, like hoodies and USB drives. Mm-hmm. The kids' suggestions were pretty clear on this. You know, give us more information, help us out. Label these things, and parents need to know what to look for on it, because they said a lot of times, they said this about their friends, they just so want to tell their parents because they want to get help getting off of it now, because they didn't realize how, and there were horrific stories of really self-aware kids who were saying, I had no idea that the withdrawal from this would be as bad as it is, and then I'm around my friends who are still doing it. You know, so these kids were, and they were absolutely clear. And this is what bothers me so much about these, you know, this merchant of doubt philosophy of trying to scramble the data on us that comes out of these companies. The kids said, absolutely, one of the things we could do is get rid of the flavors. They said, you know, the Fruity Pebbles stuff is meant to suck them in. And these kids said if they didn't have them, they've tasted just the straight up cigarette nicotine ones. They don't like it. And they know now, they're starting to get that information. So I think for me, I talked to Gus about it. I think the biggest thing is for us to dispel this notion that these are bad kids, that this is horrible behavior, you know, kind of the scared straight, just don't do it. I think the education piece of being very candid with them, I think it's scary enough for them now when they're hearing that we as adults, we as research scientists, our research scientists at the Department of Health still don't know exactly what's causing these lung injuries. So I'm just being as straight open with him, talking to him about it, you know, and there's kids today are doing the thing. I asked them what's the most effective way, and they said people that they trust, you know, giving them information they feel like they can get. And it really is peer-to-peer counseling. It's going to be a grind, but we saw it at Hopkins. These are student leaders who many, there were several that I've crossed paths before at other advocacy issues, that they're that engaged. Same thing out in St. Cloud. So I talked to Gus about, you know, talking to his friends about it. Don't judge people who are doing this, but, you know, pass on information. If they're your buddy and your friend, say, hey, you know, they're finding out these things are really bad, and the adults are here to help you.
Governor Walz, these are stressful times for everybody, and I think we all understand about coping skills. And this awareness campaign is terrific, but do we need to go one or two steps further? Does there need to be legislation at a state level in terms of limiting access, or have we done everything from a legislative standpoint that needs to be done here to protect our kids?
No. And I look at this, like I said, I don't believe, and kids know this, that you can't do prohibition on this, but we do many things that we educate and we wait till you're old enough as an adult to make decisions. And adults make poor decisions. You can still smoke. It's a bad decision, but at least you've been informed and you're of an age of consent where you kind of understand that. I think the movement towards T21, you know, the tobacco 21, we see cities doing this in communities across the state. I think it makes sense for us to take a look at that. And I really do think the research is backing up what these kids know instinctively. Don't allow them to camouflage these things and get rid of the flavors. And at least that's a start. But recognize we're still going to have to continue to educate them. We've got a whole lot of kids right now that, unfortunately, all that ground we made on traditional cigarettes, we've got them addicted on nicotine. And we have to understand we're going to have to wean them off that and get them down. And I mean, there was a young lady yesterday at Hopkins said she wouldn't have believed it was the hardest thing ever. And, you know, she's starting to do her own research. She said, for certain people, this is as hard as leaving heroin.
Governor, we have a question about that from a caller who's on his combine in Faribault on a wet field, no less, trying to get his crops in. We're going to ask you about that in 1 minute. But he wants to know about advertising as it relates to vaping. And do these kids feel duped by these companies? And now, in retrospect, realize what happened to them, that they were victims here?
Yeah, it's a great question. They do. They do, and they're a little frustrated by it. These are fairly savvy consumers. They've grown up in an age of internet ads, Instagram, and things like that. But I think what they felt like was if something's being sold as this, they heard adults telling them that this was a good way to get off of cigarettes. They saw people, and it was for some people, and that's the way it was sold to them. And I think they felt like this thing got its foot in the door under false pretenses, and they were duped. And I like that in the tobacco campaigns where it was about taking back your power from companies that misled you. And then they do feel that way. Mm-hmm. They felt like it was wrong. I think the advertising question is really good. For a time, I remember if you're not over 60, you don't remember the Marlboro Man commercials with the Magnificent Seven background and all that, because we banned them, mm-hmm. I believe, in 69, 70. But like living in Asia, they were still doing it in the 1980s. In 90, I saw it there, and it had a huge impact. China has a horrific smoking issue going on, and 98% of these e-cigarettes are manufactured in China. And a lot of that is the advertising, too. So I do think we need to look at that. They're still on TV here. Turn it over to Adult Swim on the cartoons at night. Mm-hmm. That is a target market of 18 to 25-year-olds, and it's Juul commercials constantly. And so, yeah, I think, again, making sure that we have an education campaign, making sure we know, and like these kids said, you know, maybe some things just to make it a little more difficult for people to do it. These were the kids saying, you know, if their school had vape detectors in the bathrooms, they could at least go to the bathroom now, because there are certain restrooms they cannot use because they know kids are vaping in them. And these are kids asking adults, can you do a little more for us? Can you make it a little bit harder for people to get these? At the same time, talking to them. And I can't stress enough how much they came back to this mental health piece, and how much they came back that don't make us be the bad kids. Don't make this about criminalization, but make it about that this is a really bad product that is going to cause horrific problems. And we should make sure that you're at least 21, an adult, and you make an informed decision before you use it.
Governor, last question before we let you go. Many Minnesota farmers are hurting right now. It's been a double whammy. First, the tariffs. Bloomberg reports $28 billion paid out directly to farmers, twice what the auto bailout cost 10 years ago. And now you've got the weather, wettest year, wettest decade. What, if anything, can we do as a state to help farmers that in many cases can't get into their fields to complete their harvest?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I just got off the phone an hour ago with the president of the potato growers. We don't have a huge potato growing, but what we do up in the Red River Valley, East Grand Forks, and some of those folks up there, he said he talked to people who've been doing this their entire lives, said this is the worst it's ever been. Perfect storm up there, too wet to get them out. They're rotting in the fields. The freeze come and it's over. Same exact situation with sugar beets. Sugar beets can take a freeze and heal if it warms up again. That's not going to happen, and they can't get them out. So It's catastrophic. We're looking at things that we can do, especially with sugar beets, maybe remove some of the restrictions on weight limits on trucks. I mean, we're looking in every direction. Here in Minnesota, we put in a dairy protection, kind of a safety net piece of issue. But it goes down to this. This is so heavily dependent on the trade issue, and it is such a volatile business to be in because of the weather. The last thing we need to be do is adding uncertainty by politics. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're no closer. So this is a pretty challenging situation. I don't know if I want to make the comparison back to the 1980s. The economics are somewhat different, but folks that were using potatoes as a cash crop, that's gone. There's no value in soybeans. The good news is corn can still be harvested if we don't get too much snow early, but there's no market for it. And then they got the whammy. Regardless of where you feel ethanol is, it's a market I certainly believe in, and I think it's a bridge to removing carbon. The administration backtracked once again. I'm the leader, the chairman, along with Christy Noman, South Dakota, of the Biofuels Coalition for the Governors. We had a deal with them in the room, and EPA turned around and pulled the rug out from under us again this week. So I've not seen it like this. You know, my time in Congress, my family's still farming, and they said they've never seen it. So this is a crisis. The state's doing all we can, but this is very much about markets, and it's very much about federal policy.
Governor Tim Walz, thank you for what you're doing for our kids with the vaping and what you're doing for our farmers. And thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, well, anytime. And again, we're all in this together. My final thoughts, it's Jack and Diane when I was 18. John Mellencamp.
Yes.
So I joined the conversation.
That's a good tune.
I love it. Well, that's a great
tune. Thank you, Governor.
Thanks, Governor. That is a great tune. And a reminder, join Cambria's campaign. They Lied, We Know. Search that on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter. They Lied, We Know. Hashtag Escape the Vape. Great campaign that Cambria is undertaking once again to combat this vaping epidemic in our kids. We'll be back.
Paul and Jordana.
Jordana and Paul, David at the helm. Paul is home today because he's sick. You got is it the smallpox? Is it the
bubonic plague? Yeah, thanks.
Crabs?
Thanks for your concern. Bubonic. What?
Crabs?
No, well,
keeping
yeah.
You home today.
Yeah. Thanks.
Syphilis? Got a little touch of the syphilis?
You're starting that rumor. There's a small percentage of listeners now that think I have syphilis and crabs.
Concerned about your health.
And that might actually help my street cred just a little bit. I invented Doppler and I have crabs. Back to you.
Oh, my goodness. Talking a lot about kids today on the show. It wasn't really planned this way, but that's how it shook out. Obviously, the governor is still on his listening tour. And when we get back, there is a program, I believe it's called BARC. Schools are using it to, for lack of a better word, spy on their students, but in the best possible way. Did anybody spy on your students when they were in school? They didn't have take-home computers, right?
No, they did not. And the internet came online, back like 96, 97. So they missed out on most of that.
Okay.
But it's not just emails now. It's social media that they're keeping an eye on. And they're doing it for a wide variety of reasons, to cut down on bullying, the risk of suicide, and also to try to thwart these, you know, school shootings before they happen.
Exactly. As someone who
and
has
are
kids
you okay with surveillance?
Well, that's it. As someone who has kids in school, I think this is a pretty terrific idea. We all get on our high horse and say, oh, we got to stop these shootings. We got to stop the drugs or we got to stop the bullying. And if that means looking at their communications to each other, then that's exactly what we need to be doing. The end will justify the means. And they're still kids. They can't necessarily be trusted with electronic means of communication if they're using it to bully or set up drug deals or plan school shootings.
And surveillance has bipartisan support, unlike gun control.
That's right.
So that's something we seem to all agree on.
We're talking about that at 4:10. We will open the phones and take your calls next.
Paul and Jordana.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.